it going.
Got it going.
So this is the, basically the observance of the American people,
yes,
rather than the of the Vietnamese, although of course you saw their condition too and you felt for that. But as an American,
the people whose inner state I was most confident I understood was
mm-hmm,
my
yeah.
fellow Americans,
mm-hmm.
and I saw in so many of them a meaningless activity.
Yeah.
They're very busy,
mm-hmm.
but it was very empty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, file a good report, come up with your quota.
Pins in the map.
Fill, show that you'd built so many square feet of refugee housing, make it through till your next R&R in Hawaii and your next shopping trip and your next rotation home, but just so void of any real meaning to the activity. It filled up the time,
mm-hmm.
but they could not
frenetic.
Say why. They couldn't say what it was they were building. They couldn't say what it was they were there for. They couldn't say who it was they were doing this for. And it seems to me, did then, and still does, that to know God is to know for whom
mm-hmm.
we live and move and have our being and work, and to know God causes you to rethink your work, and to know God gives you work to do that is meaningful work,
mm-hmm.
not just rolling a rock up a hill so that it can come back down again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my notion in coming to seminary was that a Christian minister helps people find the meaning in their life.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was impelled to that most vividly by seeing a whole lot of people whose lives were explicitly, I mean, almost the way they talked, you could hear them marking time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They were almost coming out and saying, I'm living a meaningless life. You know, the great theme song of the troops in Vietnam was, we got to get out of this place.
Yeah.
Well, that was sort of the theme song of all the civilian people, too.
And
I'm here because it's got to be done, but it's vain. I'm here, it'll help my career, but it's going to be washed away. I'm here doing this, but don't hold me responsible for it. I'm here because somebody else said for me to be here. I'm here, and when are they going to serve up the free drinks? Just so sad, I thought, a way to live.
And it's not, but that is a special condition of war? Or do you think this is more the condition that other that people normally go through,
mm.
but that you can perhaps see more clearly in the condition of war?
It's the latter.
I
think that's the human condition, as the existentialists painted it, that became very vivid in those civilian appendages to the military, U.S. military
mm-hmm.
Facilities in and around a place like Da Nang.
And so then you graduated in 72?
Yeah.
I see by your class photograph on the wall.
That is true. That is true. And it was an interesting crowd in seminary at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the only IVS volunteer who returned and went to seminary, a number did. And the seminary students at that time, you know, included people who were avoiding the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, the draft was winding down, but they would have avoided the draft if it had still been in place. There were pacifist, anarchist, anti-war people, even the Episcopal Church, which tends to be a pro state and just war church, had a peace fellowship at that point that was against having chaplains in the army. Some of them gave a hard time to the newly appointed Episcopal bishop for the armed forces. So we had lots of interesting debates, even
mm-hmm.
on a campus like this, in those years, 69 to 72, about the morality of the war and the mm-hmm. invasion of Cambodia that came during that time.
But you said that other IVSers went into a seminary situation?
Yeah, might be hard-pressed to give you a name, but one who returned in 69, who was part of our orientation as volunteers headed for Vietnam,
uh-huh.
was himself just back and headed for Garrett Seminary in
uh-huh.
Chicago. I remember that much.
Okay. It may not be important to
Gene Stoltzfus was a seminary dropout.
Okay. Well, yes, he had a background and still is very active.
Right. Gene loaned me, because he was a dropout, when I was coming to seminary, his large print Greek Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Which I brought here to seminary with me.
Okay.
He said, I won't be needing this for a while. You're going to seminary, you can have this. And I had his in possession. I believe I've since returned it to
him. Okay, all right. Because I said, I'm seeing him sometime in the Midwest trip. I'll say hello for you.
Good, do that. Yeah. I like Gene a lot. Gene mm-hmm. came to this gathering at Harper's Ferry
yeah.
in 93 and stays very much involved in mm-hmm. IVS more than
oh, yeah.
I do.
No, he seems to be that kind of person. Tell me briefly, of course, but about your one meeting of by then a former Viet Cong through the program of I guess what voluntary surrenders and reintegration
mm-hmm,
with the government. You mentioned that in your yellow form and
right.
very very briefly.
I didn't like to play soldier or play CIA or hang around a lot with those people. I thought it was important to keep a kind of a clean line between
mm-hmm.
IVS and military, paramilitary, espionage stuff. So I think the occasion that took me there was orientation for an incoming group of IVS volunteers. I think I wouldn't have gone just for fun on my own, but
uh-huh.
somehow as part of letting them see what was the situation, what was going on, we arranged a visit to this camp for former Viet Cong returnees who were still under confinement and some supervision. They had not yet gotten their full freedom to return home. The promise was surrender and you'll be able to return home. They were in the intermediate stage
right, yeah.
of a holding camp in Da Nang. If they went back, no doubt the Viet Cong would kill them for being traitors, and
mm-hmm.
if they went to their home villages, who knows what would happen to them at the hands of government authorities. So here they were betwixt and between, and the most clear recollection I have is of a conversation with this officer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what his rank or his specific assignment with the Viet Cong had been, but he was a very alert person, and as we chatted and we told him what we were doing in Vietnam and that we were volunteers with an international organization concerned with economic development, he said, and who funds you? And we explained that we had chiefly contracts with the Agency for International Development, and he said, I thought so. So that just told me that there were folks on the other side very astute about our setup,
mm-hmm.
our working relationships, who was who, and what difference money makes. So that then if you back up and take the big picture of how the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese worked on public opinion in Western countries,
mm-hmm.
it isn't surprising that they knew how to do that. I mean, they really had us psyched out and figured out very well. That's the inference that I drew from that one little encounter.
It wasn't that...
He, by the way, this officer, I think, had chosen to come in under the Open Arms program because his mother, he had word that his mother in his village at home was sick and alone and in need of him. So I think it was really his filial duty.
Rather than
more than
ideological reconversion.
I believe so. I believe so. I mean, maybe some of the other too, but he did not sound, I mean, he was not taking a line saying Karl Marx was a fool and Ho Chi Minh was a deceiver. He was not saying any of that. He sounded still quite critical of the Saigon regime and our approach to economic life, and he was unrepentant of any of his economic and political views. He was just going home because he was needed at home.
When he made his comment about "I thought so" or whatever, was he meaning to say, "Oh yes, well, you're trying to make a distinction, but I see that there really is no distinction"?
That's what I think he meant. That's what I think he meant. Oh, my answer confirmed to him that even those organizations that presented themselves as non-government and politically neutral, I mean, here's his Marxist analysis of the world, because of who was paying the bills, our soul was owned by the U.S. government and the Saigon government. So we could be sweet dupes, but we were dupes and of service to the capitalist power.
Any of that true? How much true, if some?
Oh, I think we were much more on the side of the status quo and private ownership and internationally aided economic development with integration into the free trade world than anything else. I think any of our assistance to co-ops and to land reform of a radical nature was pretty minimal. And I have to say that, for my own part, then and now, I think people of wealth should sit loose to their wealth and should share it. But I'm not one who has any hope that a forced redistribution of wealth leads to justice or a reliable, lasting, more equitable society. So I think I was neoliberal or conservative at that point in my thinking, and still am. And that's one reason that I didn't have the motivation to jump ship with the IBS leaders resigning in 67, or to repent quickly of the support that I, through IBS and the U.S. effort, had given to the government of the South. I continue to think that it was a government that failed up its possibilities.
The South Vietnamese government?
Yeah, that they could have delivered better, they could have done more, they could have gotten their act together. They, the economic potential of the country could have flourished if there had been more people of character and integrity and willingness to respect the rules and unwillingness to seize private gain out of their positions of public trust. So in that respect, I'm still somebody who's hopeful for public servants who care about the public and private entrepreneurs who let their ambition be harnessed for a larger good. I'm still a believer that that's the best way of coping with human nature as it is.
No, I'm just thinking of this man's perspective.
He I think, saw me as a dupe.
Well, I mean, he would say, it may be, I don't know how accurately I could speak for him, but he would say, well, so you have people who are out in doing agriculture work, you have people who are doing this kind of work, you yourself are in education, there's other people doing other kinds of work. These were programs that AID said they wanted done.
That's right.
And of course, you recognize that these are good. And I would recognize that some of these things are good too, okay? But is there ever an instance where IVS says, we're going to do this, make a decision to start a new program, and then have AID pay the bill?
For something that wasn't their idea, their initiative, or part of their plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't think he was well enough informed to push me on that kind of a question.
Oh, okay, all right.
But
so he just took the connection and said, well, as soon as you got the money,
obviously you are at the behest of...
You're just an agent.
Right, right.
Okay.
I think that's how he summarized us and put us into his map of...
Yeah, so that he wouldn't have to make the finite distinctions.
Right.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
But the encounter has stuck with me, I think, just because his insight impressed me,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he wasn't kowtowing or currying favor by espousing, you know, that he'd seen the light and repented of the error of his ways. He was tough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm here because my mama needs me and I'm going home under your safe conduct. Don't bother me with
and
your re-education junk.
And the full implication is that once Mama is well or buried, he may not stick around much longer after that.
But I mean, think of the candor.
And think of the honesty and the dedication and the tough as nails.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff, and compare that to the South Vietnamese government people.
Exactly. So, whereas I didn't do any survey, read any of the CIA assessments of morale and all that stuff, I take him as a representative figure for the whole Viet Cong effort,
mm-hmm.
and it helps me understand why they could stand up to years of bombing and living on roots and survive to topple a government.
No, sometimes looking at a microcosm like that is better than wasting your time mastering the minutia,
mm-hmm.
you know, and getting caught up with that. I quite agree. Now, you know, it's about quarter past.
I think we should stop. I need to see if this man's flight is coming in on time and turn my thoughts to Virginia, 1996.
Yes,
even though I have loved being in Vietnam again.
Yeah, and I would, you know, it would be nice if we could go on forever, but, you know, we don't have forever all the time.
Right.
So, Richard, thank you very much.
You are very welcome, Paul.
Okay, and I'll turn, we better turn this thing off.
Turn your machine off.